Jeff's Guitar Clinic is a multifaceted shop offering guitars, amplifiers, and all accessories, guitar lessons for all ages, and instrument repair of the highest quality. Take the scenic drive to beautiful Fort Atkinson and see what total customer satisfaction is all about. Call Jeff's Guitar Clinic today at 920-723-1733. That's Jeff's Guitar Clinic at 920-723-1733. Jeffsguitar.com.
Injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh.
When you hire a lawyer to help you with your personal injury, you want to know that you'll have that lawyer's personal attention. With John and I, that's exactly what you'll get. With many firms, the lawyer that you see in the ad is not the lawyer who's going to be representing you in the case.
One of the differences with Mike and my practice is that when you hire us, you'll have us personally involved in your case.
Call injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh at 257-5661 for the personal attention you deserve.
Welcome to another podcast at SlicedOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers. Joining us now from the Capital Times and the Nation, John Nichols. John spent a couple days up in Oshkosh at the Wisconsin Democratic Party's convention. Very interesting, because you had so many candidates running for various offices. Tell me about your experience.
Well, it was a good place to go if you want to get a sense of where the Democratic Party is at this point. And there are a couple of observations that I think come out of it. First off, there's a lot of Democrats running for a lot of offices. I mean, you really have a very full ballot. And the Democrats started their convention on the day that candidates filed, right? And, you know, things pretty well finally locked in. What was striking about it was that this late in the process, with about 2.5 months to go, there were a striking number of gubernatorial candidates who really haven't fully honed their candidacies. And that was pretty evident, because some of the speeches were just, you know, uninspired or pretty imperfect. And the odd thing about it was that if you were to look at all the candidates who spoke, you know, on both days, the candidate who gave the most gubernatorial address sounded most like a governor was Josh Call, who's running for attorney general, Peg Lautenschlager's son. And he just gave an incredibly strong, poised, effective speech. And the crowd was into it. He, you know, did all the things that, that frankly, even a sitting governor would seek to do. He talked about the powers of the office, what it can do. He was critical, obviously, of the incumbent, Brad Schimmel, but also very thoughtful about, you know, what's going on at the federal level, the state level, the role of the attorney general. And it was energetic and effective. So Call really was, you know, I would say if you went to that convention saying, you know, I want to see a governor, there you go. But he's not running for governor.
Could you also get a sense that, I don't know how the crowd reacted to his speech, but could you get the sense that there was a real sense of emotion because of his mother passing away a couple months ago?
Yeah, Peg Lautenschlager, Wisconsin's great attorney general, and really, over many decades, one of the most beloved grassroots political figures in the state, also one of the most brilliant political figures in the state. Yeah, there's clearly people who, you know, understood the circumstance. The candidate, Josh Call, referenced it gently. I mean, he didn't really play on it too much. He's certainly, you know, in this fight as who he is. And he spoke a great deal about his experience, his passion for voting rights, his passion for consumers, for workers. I mean, his mother, who you and I both knew quite well, would have been very proud. And it happened that I was standing in the back of the hall listening as he spoke with former Lieutenant Governor Barbara Lawton and with Josh's father. And
Bill Ripple.
And so, mm-hmm. Yeah. So there was a, you know, yes, it was very emotional. And yet, I would emphasize, very forward-looking. This is a guy, there's simply no question. If you went to this convention and you looked and said, you know, who looks like somebody who has a real path to victory in November, and also a long, presumably, long and very important future in Wisconsin politics. It was Josh Call. He was very impressive. Now, interestingly, so we talked about Josh for a moment. Let us also say the candidate who gave the most effective speech of a potential Democratic nominee for governor. Remember, we're talking about Josh Call, somebody who, you know, actually kind of already looks like and feels like somebody who could be governor. But as a candidate, somebody who positioned himself, you know, really had the address that, you know, you think you could take on the trail, you know, go out there and, you know, cross the state, any corner of the state, any county, and inspire people. It was Mandela Barnes, who's running for lieutenant governor. And I have to tell you, the speech that Mandela Barnes gave on Saturday morning, right? You tell me, what did you think?
Well, I had seen him speak at a fundraiser in Madison earlier this spring, and I went, whoa, because he wasn't always particularly good on the stump. He was kind of shy and really he wasn't particularly great at a stump speech. And I don't know what's happened over the last couple of years, but Mandela Barnes has turned it on.
Well, mind you,
I've always been a big supporter. He's a great guy, but his communication skills have gone up exponentially.
Well, can I offer you one notion here? Remember how old he is? He's 31 years old.
Right? I keep forgetting.
I mean, you may have seen him when he was a very young man, you know, a few years ago. And so you're right. He has, you know, I don't know what the proper word is, blossomed. He has hit his mark.
Mm-hmm.
And the speech that he gave was, I would argue, rhetorically brilliant. I mean, here he is talking as a young African-American candidate to an audience that is overwhelmingly white, that comes from around the state. And he placed himself at the heart and soul of the Wisconsin idea. He embraced it, and yet he also spoke about the absolute need for equity, for addressing issues that are unaddressed. It was nuanced and thoughtful. He brought his crowd with him, and he made a case that was, for himself, obviously, as a candidate, very focused and effective, but also for a vision of Wisconsin and a vision of the Wisconsin idea that says it can work. That it can work for people in Grant County and Door County and Milwaukee County and Dane County and every other part of the state. But if it is going to work, you have to work at it, i.e. you have to consciously, it's not just some sort of, you know, chance thing. You have to consciously focus on extending the promise of the state to everyone. I just thought he nailed it. Very, very effective.
Okay.
And
now,
the odd thing about it was his opponent in the primary also delivered an exemplary speech. So, you know, the thing to understand here is that you had some of these down ballot candidates who were really nailing it. And of course, I think you're probably going to bring us to the gubernatorial candidates.
Okay. So Vinehout and McCabe gave good speeches. They're not top tier contenders, at least right now. Doesn't really look like they have prospects to become top-tier candidates. Who else gave good speeches?
Well, one of the candidates who, you know, has a lot of endorsements and, you know, has at least some resources, seems to be running a statewide campaign that's pretty solid, State Rep Dana Locke, actually gave the best speech I've heard him give in this campaign. It was very sharp, thoughtful, effective, and notably, very pointed in his appeals. He spoke to a lot of the economic and social justice issues that the delegates care about. He was very, very tough on Foxconn, which is a big issue, obviously, the governor's big development and all that. And so I think Locke's really was effective. And it happened, he was, at the end of the speakers, so it's a kind of a tough place to be. But he got the crowd going, and I think hit his mark very well. And I think there's a lot of evidence when you talk to people at the convention, their folks were impressed. Additionally, Kelderoy's, the former state rep, was solid in her remarks and really, I think, connected with the delegates on a number of issues. She spoke about gun violence. She was very, very pointed in doing so, opened her remarks in that regard, talking about her child in daycare, preparing for a potential attack on a daycare center and stuff like that. And so it worked, and I think she did well. Malin Mitchell, who's always good at rousing a crowd, was good at rousing a crowd and certainly said things that connected with folks. But I'm not sure that he kind of laid out the agenda as effectively as he will need to. And he really is an upper-tier candidate. Similarly with Tony Evers, I think that the state superintendent of public instruction, who many people have seen as the front runner, gave a sound speech. It worked, on the basic levels, but it wasn't an inspired speech. And in a way, he had a technique. He was talking about obviously trying to address the fact that some people see him as not the most exciting candidate. But in the middle of the speech,
The first thing people bring up to me all the time is how uninspired he is.
So he used the word damn in his speech, right? Uh-huh. And that was supposed to be like, whoa, man, the guy's, throwing some cuss words into his speech. And he used it in the middle of it, right? And the problem was, at that point, people were already pretty well settled into their seats, if you know what I mean. And so for him, I think in his speech it was a structural problem. He should have started out with that. If he was, I'm not going to let Scott Walker, or damned if I let Scott Walker get away with this, or whatever. If he'd opened up and said that, the crowd might have, shaken his head and gone, whoa, okay, I'm ready to listen. And so he still needs to work at this, just needs to work at getting it structured right. He has some pretty good appeals in it.
Although, I tell you, speeches at conventions, back in 1988, it was in La Crosse, the convention was in La Crosse, and Tony Earle, Ed Garvey, Herb Cole, and Doug LaFollette were all running for the U.S. Senate seat being vacated by Bill Proxmire. Yeah. I was supporting Earle that year, but Ed Garvey got up and it was his Where's the Anger speech, and he went down a litany of issues that we should... So he gave a great speech, and Herb Cole gave a horrible speech. It was just terrible. As a matter of fact, what I didn't know at the time was I was sitting behind Bill Christopherson, who wrote the speech. I didn't at the time really know anything about Bill Christopherson, and I said to whoever I was sitting next to, I said, who wrote that horrible speech?
But
Herb Cole ended up getting the U.S. Senate seat that year.
Okay, so let me counter your very good observation. Of course convention speeches are not definitional. However, they're important. They give you a sense of whether, where this person is at as regards their ability to communicate. Now, I'm going to give you a little sort of insight here. You can take it where you want to take it. I don't think any of these candidates own a chain of shopping have hundreds of millions of dollars.
That is probably
true. They can give bad speeches, okay?
All right, we're going to take a break. John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation.
I want to thank all the labor unions here in Dane County that help keep SliesOffice.com up and going so you keep up to date. Whether it be the Madison Firefighters, Local 311, or the Madison Teamsters, Local 695, or our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated. These are some of the most active local unions who organize, and constantly stand up for workers. Thank you from SliesOffice.com.
Welcome back to Sly's Office, brought to you by the United Steelworkers and local sponsors like Madison Teachers Incorporated, Madison Teamsters, Local 695, and our friends. Let's see, we got teachers, we got Madison Firefighters, Local 311. All right, so John, the straw poll happens. Kelda Hellenroys runs away with it. Then everybody else was kind of bunched into a pack. And then there was Paul Soglin, who got one vote. A lot of people are shaking their heads at this. Tell me about the straw poll and what you think it meant.
I think the straw poll has meaning. It's not definitional. It doesn't, lock in anything. But it's a very good measure of where Democratic activists are. You had roughly 800 people vote in it at this convention. These are highly engaged folks who have been watching the race. And again, doesn't tell you everything. And remember, even Kelda Royce only got 23%. So she didn't exactly sweep everything. But this is a good measure of where the people who are actually going to carry this campaign, and by the way, again, all these candidates with, I think, a little bit of money trouble. So as a result, a campaign that's got to work at the grassroots, got to be, in the counties around the state, they're going to carry this campaign forward. And Kelda Royce got twice as many votes as the next closest candidate. That was Malin Mitchell. And Tony Evers was right next to Malin Mitchell. They were essentially tied. But interestingly enough, in that same pack, right there, around 90 votes, was Dana Wachs and Kathleen Vinehout and Mike McCabe and Matt Flynn, who I didn't think had as good a convention as I maybe expected he would. Matt Flynn, not too far behind. And you understand, so you've got this group of candidates who, in my opinion, sort of got a double whammy here, if you will. Kelda Royce clearly won. And instead of having a clear second-place finisher, you end up with, four or five clear second-place finishers. You know what I mean? It's like a group of them jammed together. And so what this does is move Royce up. I think it definitely moves her toward status as a first-tier candidate and somebody who is going to be watched by a lot of folks, frankly, maybe even have a moment. I think she was having something a moment before. I think it's more so now. Then as regards the rest of the field, they carry on, and at least that pack in the middle there. And so what the convention did was help Royce. It didn't necessarily do a lot to help anybody else. And then it did obviously some harm to Paul Soglin. When you finish last, remember, he finished behind the guy from Kenosha who spoke. There's a young guy from Kenosha who's filed and is a candidate and actually gave a pretty decent speech. But Soglin was behind him. And Soglin got one vote after, getting up there and giving a speech and being present, shaking hands and the whole bit. And here's the troubling thing, Sly. Soglin was there with his campaign manager. You should have. You were thinking
should have had two,
in the range of two. Yeah, and frankly, no. That was. There's no other way to say it. But that was a tough circumstance there, and a jarring one. But as regards defining race, again, I think that Kelda Royce, she definitely is a person who comes out with the bump, if there is a convention bump, and for the rest of the candidates. I think for Evers, it's a little tough because he didn't, certainly didn't hit front-runner mark there. For Malin Mitchell, who I think had really put a lot of effort in the convention and hoped to kind of break out, he certainly is in the running, solid place, but roughly where Evers is.
He should have been very well organized because he has the endorsement of the AFL-CIO. In AFSCME
and the firefighters.
CIU and the firefighters. So
and they put resources into the convention. They were very present. Malin Mitchell's campaign and his supporters. And so it isn't that they did badly. It is simply that they didn't get that bump. And both Evers and Mitchell, ended up roughly in the same place as Beinhout and McCabe and Wachs. Right, in that rough center there, and just a little ahead of Flynn. That's not like a big talking point to take away. And so I think this race remains what it has been. Very wide open, relatively ill-defined, with one candidate clearly moving up, that's Keldroys. But with most of the other candidates, slogging forward. And I wish I could give you something that said, yeah, this convention defined everything. But remember, straw polls are, they're useful, they're informative, but they also are, just snapshots of a group of activists getting together. They're not necessarily definitive.
Well,
what they give you,
I think in 2015, when Bernie essentially tied Hillary at the Democratic convention, that was quite a wake up for a lot of people.
Well, but that's my point here is, They can take somebody who hasn't been kind of in the center of the limelight and move that person up, right? Or they can take someone who's rising and gets a real boost and move them up. That's, I think, what happened with Keldroys. That isn't necessarily the end of the story. And I'd only counsel that because you had this big jam up in the middle, all those candidates are going to go forward. And the one candidate, I will tell you, or a couple candidates, the fact that Wachs and Beinhout did as well as they did after frequently being dismissed by a lot of people who are, kind of trying to rate this race, it suggests to me that both of them, by the way, from Western Wisconsin, have a little more going on with their campaigns than perhaps some people are noticing.
This is quite a year, and again, we're talking about an August primary. I don't know what the turnout's going to be, but it won't be what it would be if it was in September. And a lot of people are on vacation in August, so we're talking about the middle of August. This thing's coming up quickly, and yet we have primaries for Secretary of State and Treasurer, and people are actively running. Running hard in this thing.
And actually, Gabe, this is another painful thing, Slot. A painful thing for the convention not to, give you too many. There were a number of the candidates for Secretary of State and Treasurer who gave really sound speeches that were very credible, that were competitive with the quality of some of the gubernatorial speeches.
Did you ever think you'd see a three-way race for Wisconsin Treasurer?
I have seen it. I've been around a long time, Sly. I remember when Les Aspin and Charlie Smith and somebody else, I think, were banging away at it in 1968. And I've seen five ways for Secretary of State. Those offices used to have real power.
Right.
And were also seen as stepping stones maybe to a race.
Well, it's been a very long time.
Yes, it has. You're absolutely right. Now, the interesting thing is that Doug LaFollette, the Secretary of State, forever, got up and gave, a strikingly solid speech that had the crowd cheering. And the weird thing about it is when you're watching a convention like this, you recognize that some people who are often don't get a lot of attention or even aren't even treated with, all that much reverence in the party. If they've been around for a while, they have political skills. And so LaFollette, obviously talked about himself wanting to renew the office of Secretary of State and stuff like that. But he, in addition, went down the list of other candidates, re-electing Tammy Baldwin, who was obviously there and gave a good speech. It was very well received. Electing Democrats as governor and the legislature, stuff like that. So LaFollette was, he knew how to get his applause. And it's notable he has a primary challenge, Arvina Martin. She got up and gave a solid speech as well. But, at a convention of activists, I suppose there are some people who might have thought that LaFollette wouldn't win the straw poll. He did win the straw poll. And he did, I think in part because he got up there and delivered, a pretty sound speech. It was a close result. Martin got a good vote, too. But Zapata came out a little ahead. In the Secretary of State's race,
Treasurer's, you mean the Treasurer's race?
The Treasurer's race. You know, I apologize. I'm going to have to. You got to speak thoughtfully about these because we sometimes blend the offices there. But yes, in the state Treasurer's race, the all three of the candidates who got up did quite well. And actually, what was interesting and I think important was that the three contenders for the race all talked about doing big things with the office. Dawn Marie Sass, who is the former state treasurer, gave a very good speech in which she talked, and I was excited to hear this, talked about the idea of creating a public bank along the line.
Like North Dakota.
Of North Dakota. And you know that that is a that's a very live issue with a lot of progressive activists. And she got, you know, I mean, she had people sitting up paying attention, applauding. It was an effective vision, not merely for getting her old job back, but for wanting to do new things with it. And I think she did very well. The other two contenders did quite well. Obviously, Sarah Godlewski, who was very active in the campaign to renew the office, was very well organized, and she ran away with the straw poll. Led by a wide margin, and her speech was very, very poised and effective. And so, you know, you've got people in that race who, frankly, are worth paying attention to and listening to.
Great.
And then, of course, the only one who didn't have a race, the only person who doesn't have a primary is, as we mentioned in the previous segment, Josh Call. And he was afforded a longer period in which to speak and really, among the so-called down-ballot races, really shined.
Thanks for giving us a recap of the Democratic State Convention. Oshkosh, got another one of the books now for 2018. Yeah, it is 2018. John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation. Thanks for coming to SliceOffice.com.
SliceOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
Making stuff matters because when we make things in America, America makes it. American workers and families make it. Our communities make it. Consider this. For every one manufacturing job in our communities, five more jobs are supported. Manufacturing jobs pay an average of 10 to 50% more than service sector jobs. That allows working families to support their local businesses, schools, emergency services, and more. Creating 2.5 million new manufacturing jobs would mean at least $100 billion for our economy over the next decade. Domestic manufacturing is the green economy. It's among the cleanest, most efficient, and productive in the world. That's why the United Steelworkers and our more than 1 million members and retirees are fighting so hard to protect and grow manufacturing. Because making stuff really does matter. Join our fight. Visit usw.org and like us at facebook.com/steelworkers. Support American manufacturing. Buy American. Buy Union.